with you with the positive mind. WBAI, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday here. 99.5 FM. 99.5 FM on your dial in New York City. We bring you interesting, exciting stuff, and today we have some fascinating discussions, this week especially. In the studio with me, Stacy Nunez, N-U-N-E-Z, who works, well, we're going to talk a little about that, and Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. Hi, Kent.
Hi.
Hey, Stacy.
How you doing?
This is an exciting day because we're going to look at the thing about people drop out. People drop out. Teenagers drop out. Students drop out. You know, and then people drop out. They drop out of relationships. They drop out of love. We want to look at it, and we were thinking, how do we do it? Well, Stacy is such a specialist in working with adolescents, adolescent psychology, young adulthood. I thought I would call her in and ask her what she knows about why people drop out of school and what we could learn from that, and then Kent and I would extrapolate and talk about the adult mind, which you can also do, of course, Stacy, because that's what you do. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what dropout means first. Is there such a thing as what is dropout?
High school dropout. The rate of high school dropout now is about 33%. It's a silent epidemic, as they're calling it, and the rates are just increasing. I think kids are bored with school.
The rate may be 33%, but the rate of what?
The rate of high school dropout, of students dropping out of high school, is 33% across the nation.
The number of kids who go to school and quit, walk away, see, those are about 33%. One out of every three kids going to high school is quitting nowadays?
Yep, out of every three.
That's a big deal. Any particular cultures?
With minorities, it's a little bit higher. It's about 50%. With Hispanic females, actually, it's 60% of Hispanic females not graduating high school. So that is a high number.
60% of Hispanic females do not graduate high school.
Do not graduate high school.
Why not?
There's a number of reasons. It's not interesting
enough.
Let's
start with that one. Mm-hmm. Let's start with either we could talk about dropouts in general, but let's talk about the Hispanic female dropout for a moment. Why would so many people drop out?
There's a need for family, I think. There's a lot of pregnancy rates with Hispanic women, young Hispanic adolescents. They're an instant family. Young families are starting to arise. There's the instant family, no need for school anymore. You have the baby, you have mom and father, no need for school.
So a young girl goes to high school, feels in a pretty oppressive environment, teachers telling you what to do, guards gates when you walk in, you got any knives on your body, we make sure we check for you. They tell you exactly how much clothing you could wear and how little you could wear. You've got everybody in charge of you. You've got a family at home that's struggling to get by. You go to school, you look for affection in some way. You find affection, you find sex. You get pregnant, now here comes a choice. I could either stay in school and do everything you guys are telling me to do, or I could have a baby doll. What do they call baby dolls in Spanish?
Muñequita.
What's a muñequita?
It's a little doll, and they treat the baby as a little doll.
It's a muñequita. I could have my own. And so you could walk around now, dropping out of school, it gives you a reason because you're pregnant. And you could have a baby that you carry with you, and you now are in some way superior in your culture?
Yes.
Or you've stepped up?
It's a form of status, absolutely.
To have a child. Mm. Well, how appealing compared to going to school.
It's also tradition. You know, mom had me when I was young. It's a tradition.
Mom had to have you when you were young, right. Stacy. You mean mom had it when she was young?
Right.
My mother had me when I was very young. Okay.
Sorry.
That's cute. Okay, so other reasons that young teens drop out of school.
Boredom. They're not interested in school anymore. They're way ahead of the times. Now with the internet, books are not interesting anymore. It's too slow. You know, they feel bored, and it's also a form of anger to sort of express to drop out of school to get back at mom and dad.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because I know that crosses over into where you, Kent Robert Shaw, have seen a lot of work and done a lot of work. What do you see with this expression of anger through dropping out of school?
Well, I think that a lot of adolescents, if they're feeling powerless within their household, a lot of anger, a lot of resentment at things that are going on that they feel are unfair, or they're holding on to a lot of anger and resentments about things that have happened in the past, divorce, addiction, whatever kinds of things that may be stored up inside, what a delicious way to get back at your parents, which often value school and school education as something very important for their own self-esteem. I mean, often parents will brag about how proud they are of their child doing well in school and the like. So what better way to get back at them, which is to do something that for many households would be shameful, which would be to become a high school dropout. And I think that's one way for teenagers to express their anger and resentment towards their parents.
And the parent substitutes, the teachers, the authorities, the police, the number of people that you have to deal with all the time. You know, it always, I know we're talking about inner city stuff now, but I know that a lot of the concerns come from, you know, a lot of the small towns where they have the even higher dropout rate. But here's the way I figured. If you're in high, let's say you're in high school and you're up, you're in some part of the city that's a tough part of the city, like where I grew up. You're poor. You're struggling. You're carrying sandwiches from old food, if you're lucky. And you look and you see these kids walking around with a lot of bling. You know, these other kids are all coming by. They don't go to school. You now have industry outside of going to school that never existed before, selling and dealing drugs. And you can now sell and deal drugs not only to your neighborhood, but you can sell and deal drugs to all the neighborhoods. So the illegal, the amount of teenagers who are in the active business of drug dealing is tremendously, well, it's very lucrative. Why would you stay in school? Who could convince you that you're better going to a classroom? You work with a lot of adolescents, Kent, who have drug problems, right?
Yes.
How do you convince them that this is not the way to go? I mean, what do? You talk about consequences, or the only thing is they finally get in trouble?
Well, I think that
what motivates?
As you're saying, that a lot of these kids see in their lives around them that it's true that some of the people who are hardworking, some of the adults that are, you know, who stayed in school have jobs that are, you know, not so satisfying, and they see around them people who dropped out of school doing illegal behavior, doing, you know, living much more fancy lives. So absolutely that becomes very appealing for them. So there has to be some sort of recognition about the fact, the statistics about what is true with people who drop out of school and sell drugs. And it's pretty frightening, some of those statistics, like 1 out of 3 will end up in jail, and something like 1 in 4 will end up dead. So I think those kinds of realities are things that 15 and 16-year-olds certainly need to hear about. You know, to go along with the bling and the fancy lifestyle is also jail time, which is, you know, being roommates with Bubba, which isn't necessarily anything anybody wants, and also ending up dead.
It's interesting because I think the teenage mind, the adolescent mind, doesn't really understand judgment. It's not formed for judgment, and they can't think consequence. So they think the here and now, and the here and now feels good to sell drugs, make money right now, have the bling. But later on in life, they don't see the road later on. Where is it going to end? Why am I going to wind up? Am I going to be in jail? Am I not going to be in jail? It's more the here and now. That feels good, to have money, to be able to buy a fancy necklace or to buy my girlfriend something fancy. And school falls by the wayside. There's no instant gratification in school. You have to learn for later. But the adolescent mind isn't developed to have that judgment and the sense of planning and futuristic thinking.
Well, the world is kind of taking a look at all the adolescents nowadays, and they say, ah, look, they're getting ADD because they have this attention deficit disorder because they can't pay attention the way they should. And what we're saying is we have a restless mind out there. And we have a restless mind not because we have a diagnosis of ADD, but we have a restless mind because we have a society that's caught in a kind of a funny place. How could you tell kids no instant gratification and have them sit in front of a computer? Computer is constant instant gratification. It gives you everything you want. What have we lost? There are no more study groups where you hang out with your friends and study. You remember that? Did you ever do that, Stacy?
Yeah, we had cooperative learning. You had to learn how to work together. You had to go to the library, research. But now it's fast-paced. It's intense. It's instant. You go online, 2 seconds, copy, paste, print, you're done.
No more library.
No more library.
No more of that getting together with people, having a study group. It's stimulating your thought that way. It's all kind of you open up your mind by yourself. And that, my friends, leads us to a much less rich environment. There is no real socialization at school. School's almost a place where you hang out and you get through. Did people used to look forward to school? You know, did school used to be the fun place? Was school the place that, you know, you really got dressed up for? I'm sure many people still do that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that particularly if you're feeling valued in the school, and I think that's part of it. I think a lot of kids who are dropping out or at somewhat feeling ostracized within the school or have a sense that they're not going to do well in school. So, you know, I think they become quite discouraged about their ability to be able to make it, to be pass courses and pass well. And so I think that that's one of the reasons they get turned off from school and connecting with other kids, perhaps on a school level or a mind level. They're starting to have low self-esteem about their ability to be one of the students that could do well in life.
But, well, then that takes us to another place. Because that, what you're saying, is a description of a child, but it's also a pretty good description of a depressed adult. Right? Don't they feel the same way? Don't you deal with that same thing with the depressed adults who don't feel like they have a purpose or they're valued or...
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the adult who is not getting back at the workplace partly because they're frightened that they're going to get turned down for job and job interviews, so that fear of rejection related to their sense that they're not very good at what they do. Certainly the depression related to relationships as well. They're not on dating services. They're not trying to get out there because they're doing a preemptive strike. And I think a lot of these adolescents are in somewhat...
What's a preemptive strike?
Preemptive strike in the sense that they know they're not going to do well in high school. They're not college material. They sort of feel like they're too stupid. They're not smart enough. They're too lazy. They have all sorts of negative adjectives in their head about why they're not the kind of person that in our society, college and all those rewards are out for them. And so they're going to pull out of school partly because they feel like that's not their strong suit. That's not what they're good at. They're not good at thinking thoughtfully and doing well in academics. That's not them, and that's often coming from, I think, a very negative place about their perceptions, about their intelligence and their work ethics and other things.
Bringing it back also to the inner city kids, college may not be an option for them. It may not be in the stars for them or in the future. They know going into high school, and high school today is framed more around preparing for college. It's more college prep courses. The SATs is junior year of high school. A lot of the students are focusing on how to take the SAT. That's the focus in the classroom.
That's a silly thing, isn't it? Imagine that you go to school to take classes on how to take tests to get into other schools.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're not going to the other schools. If college isn't in for you, you're now learning a skill that you're never going to use.
It's the old matrix algebra. I had that. I remember in high school they gave us a course. You have to take matrix algebra. It's required. And I said, matrix algebra. Okay, I took it. And it was all the theory of computers, but this is in the 60s. But I had no idea. I said, what do you apply this for? What do you use it for? And they said, oh, because you're going to get into matrix algebra too. And there you'll learn how to do it. And then they canceled the curriculum. You know, it never existed. So I had a course in my brain that was completely useless. And a lot of these kids feel that way. They're learning stuff that has absolutely no application at all. Women go to school. Now, women go to school for a couple of different reasons than men go to school. Men are in the power structure, right? Men have this male-dominated society. If you get to school, you have an education, the odds are you're going to earn a better buck. A woman going to school goes to school for a couple of reasons, including, I believe, they don't want to be at the mercy of the men telling them what they could do and how they could do it and what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do and how they should only be used for one thing and not for another. So women go to school to kind of get some power over a society that, which is now able to, they're now able to educate and move ahead and enter any industry. They also go to school to meet better men. They also go to school to meet better men. I don't think men go to school to meet women. You know, they go to school to be ahead in the male world. But women go to school as well to meet men and to meet men of a different caliber, men who have got different genetic structures, so they can advance themselves and their families. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, they call it the MRS. You're going to get your MRS.
What's your MRS?
The Mrs. It's also you're attracted to this human whose your pheromones are running around, and you see another better immune system, and you want to create better children and more advanced children than you are. Absolutely.
There is one aspect of the dropout rate that I think applies to human psychology, and is this whole concept of the push-out. Now, I talk about the push-out. When I talk about the push-out, I'm not only talking about what happens with teenagers. I'm talking about what people do in their lives. I think this is a fascinating discussion. Armand DeMille here, Stacey Nunez, Kent Robert Shaw, talking about the dropout phenomena. Stacey, let's go to this. What is a push-out?
A push-out is a student who is troublesome in class. The teachers have trouble controlling the behavior. They may be the class clown. And the administrative of the school sort of guides the student to leave. You know, if you can't control yourself in class, you might as well leave. So the student then, having maybe issues at home, comes to school to look for an escape, but is finding the push-out. And the administrative is sort of saying, if you're not going to behave, why don't you just leave, to the student.
One form of dropout in society is to make yourself such a nuisance that nobody wants to have you around. There are people who are emotional pushouts. There are people who are relationship pushouts, right? They don't know why, but they get fired by every relationship. And they say, oh, I'm just a poor victim. I couldn't find the right person. But it's the very same thing you would do in high school. There are people, what would we call it? Do you have a diagnosis term for people who...
Yeah, I think it's in the realm of provocative people, you know, sort of personality that seems to just want to test people around them. Or that would maybe be a hypothesis about what they're up to.
Talk about that. What would a provocative personality be like?
I think they're trying to sense how much love there is for them, even if they're not acting well, meaning sort of testing the waters of unconditional love. You know, can I behave poorly? Can I act poorly? And yet there's enough love that is sustained for me that you'll overlook it or will sort of allow me in your life. So I see part of the pull towards doing that for adolescents as well as adults is to test how much love there is out there for them.
But when you're somebody who's a push-out, you're always going to win because there's always a level you keep pushing people till eventually they get rid of you.
Hopefully that's not the case. I mean, if you believe in, hate the sin, love the sinner kind of idea, you should have a certain sense of tolerance that, yes, there may be some difficult parts of people's behavior, but often a fair amount of who they are is trying hard and lovable. But, yes, the part of the adolescent or the part of the employee or even the part of the relationship of a human relationship, maybe that's some aspect you have to sort of work on. Well, what is this provocative behavior? Maybe the person is overall fairly trying to be helpful or loving or trying hard, but some behaviors certainly need to be looked at. And obviously, as somebody who deals with addiction, that can be one of the big provocative behaviors for both adolescents and adults that they bring to the work relationship and spousal relationships, that's sort of testing the waters. Can you put up with me despite, you know, my relapsing on drugs and alcohol and the like?
Well, spell that out a little more. That was a long, big sentence. What do you mean in addiction specifically?
Well, I think that that could be one of the ways that adolescents are pushed out of high school, and it's one of the things that adults do to get them pushed out of relationship. Their pathological relationship to a substance, to a drug, to an addiction or something like that, that is part of the thing that's getting them pushed out of a relationship.
So I'm asking you to love me because even though I have somebody else.
Right.
And that somebody else is a drug. Let's see, will you really love me? Will you really love me? And it might even be the motivation for addiction. I'm going to find out if I'm really loved, and if I'm going to find out by having this thing that I carry around with me. And if nobody can handle it, then the thing is more faithful to me than you are. Addiction. Such an interesting thing. This is Armand DeMille, Stacey Nunez, and Dr. Kent Robert Shore. So dropping out of relationships, dropping out of high school, dropping out completely, this whole phenomena, what does it feel like? I asked Kent, who's a psychiatrist, I said, is it like dissociation, you know? People who dissociate, do they drop out? Is that a dropout feeling? Is depression a dropout feeling? What's the dropout feeling like, you know? And we were examining this, and it became fascinating where we were going with it. Try to imagine, what's it like to be a person who says, I'm out of here? And just follow that. What does it require?
Well, I think certainly a lot of depression is related to dropping out in the sense that the person is giving up. The person feels like, again, this is not something I can handle or not something that I'm very good at. So again, the dropping out is sort of a sense that I'm not comfortable here because I'm not doing well.
So powerlessness is a big key.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to feel you have no power, or is that it?
Yeah, I think that there's no power to feel better where you are. Again, I would assume getting back to adolescence and high school, if they're happy, if they're valedictorian, if they're the captain of the football team, if they're well-liked and well-respected by their peers and their teachers, they're not leaving. It's, you know, it's the kids that are not feeling particularly comfortable, well-accepted, well-liked, or, well, you know, are doing well, and they're the ones that are feeling like, you know, I'm not very good at this. I'm not good at being a student. Or I'm not good in the workforce as an adult. Or I'm not good in relationships. I'm not good at this, so I'm out of here.
So not being good at it is one of the ways that you push yourself out of it. But, you know, I mean, sometimes you just, sometimes, Kent, you look at it and you say, I'm gonna drop out of this as a way of getting even, too. I'm going to become stonewalling, for example, which is one form of dropping out of a relationship. People who are in love, they don't talk to each other anymore. And in effect, you quit the relationship. The switch goes off. So there are people who do that. Now, there seem to be some people are more likely to do that than other people. Do you think impulse-ridden people have a tendency to be more drop out of relationships than people who are not?
I think the impulse aspect of it is sort of what we were talking about before, certainly with the financial aspect of dropping out of high school, which is, yes, sometimes, you know, quitting a job abruptly or dropping out of school abruptly will have tremendous, powerful, vengeful feelings of the teachers don't treat me well or my boss hates me or something like that. So you have that immediate sort of vengeful feelings you're talking about. And then also a very quick sort of like, and I don't have to go to school today, or I don't have to deal with that nagging girlfriend who I just broke up with, or I don't have to go to that job I hate today. You know, this is kind of relaxed today. But it's not something smart a week or a month or a year from now. Dropping out of high school, leaving a job abruptly without getting another job. It is something that's very impulsive because, yes, in the first 24 hours, there could be a really wonderful, vengeful feeling going on, as well as, hey, all that stress that I was having within that relationship, within that school, I don't have today. I can watch SpongeBob all day. I can just relax. But it's not something thinking forward about, okay, what does this now mean, you know, a month or two? What are you going to be doing then?
I met a man who I knew in Haiti, and he was driving a cab here, and I recognized him, and we talked for a while, and I said to him, do you, he said he spent 6 months in Haiti and 6 months here. And I said, why do you do that? He said, well, 6 months here I work, and I work every day, and I save enough money, and then when I go to Haiti, he says, I drive mm-hmm. a car in Haiti. And I said, well, what's the difference? Why do you go to Haiti? He said, because in Haiti, he said, if you don't feel like working, you don't. He said, in most of the islands, if you wake up in the morning and you say, I don't think I'll work today, you generally can get by not doing it. A day or two, you don't get enough money on one or two days to make a difference. You don't do it. Here in America, you can't afford not to work. You got to pay your insurance. You got to keep your car going. You've got to have everything, you know, working at all times. The sense that I could drop out in that way, I mean, he did a perfect thing for himself. And he's been doing it, he said, for about 20 years. It's 6 months here, 6 months there. Maybe we all need that. Maybe that's what vacation is. You wonder what summer vacation is. Maybe summer vacation is the answer to the dropout need. What do you think?
I think it's interesting because the kids in high school have summer vacation. They have that time off. So they have also December break, spring break, Easter break, President's break. They have so many breaks that maybe it's a competition between working for nothing. There's no real incentive in high school and just hanging out at home.
I'd be an interesting study to see if the countries that have no breaks, which some of them don't, they have no school breaks. I wonder if they have a lower dropout rate.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Germany has instilled an incentive policy with their students where you work for money.
You get a shot. No, I'm sorry.
There's a financial incentive put in place for their students.
There's always that disciplined way that I appreciate so much the way certain people do it.
I think one of the things you're talking about is why would people drop out if they feel like they're not going to be happy and successful? And I think in American society, if to be happy and successful, you have to have mega money, you have to be Donald Trump, you have to be Brad Pitt, you have to be a superstar. If we set up a society that if you're just a hardworking person who does your job well, and that's not mediocre. You know, I think some people would rather be dropouts than feel like they're mediocre. And in a success-driven society like America, I could see where a lot of people would feel, I just don't want to be mediocre. I just don't want to be a hardworking member of society and do a job that's nothing spectacular. If you're not spectacular, you're nothing. So I might as well be a dropout.
One of the roles I played in my very brief acting career was Uncle Murray in 1,000 Clowns. And in 1,000 Clowns, Nick, the young boy, goes to his uncle and he says, why didn't you go for a job today? And Murray says, look, there I was heading down to the job. He said, and I got off at 42nd Street and there were 11 movie theaters there. And I could have gone to the job. He said, but here's what I ask. He said, when you're faced with 11 50-cent double features and life in its bare-ass roar on the other, what is the mature, mentally healthy step to take? And that's a question that I think you ask yourself over and over again when you look at society and you say, it may be time to just pause. And because, you know, even if you're not, if you're Brad Pitt, you don't want to drop out because you're getting the accolades. Mm. But if you look at it, and maybe dropping out's not such a bad idea. Maybe the Buddhists know something. You know, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back from the short break, we're going to play you some music brought to us by Kent Robert Shaw. Very special. And then we'll resume our discussion.
We are so wet, so gospel choir. And you are listening to B.A.I. New York. B.A.I. New York. San Bonani.
We'll be right back.
Later. It's St. Thomas. Sonny Rollins, Doug Watkins, Tommy Flanagan, and the inimitable Max Roach. I actually saw Max Roach do that once, that very piece at Birdland, as I sat humbled at his feet and decided I had to drop out of drumming. I mean, he said, what?
Yeah, drop out because this is not for me, man. I can't make it here.
I didn't have rubber in my wrists. I kept looking down at them. They were made of bone, you know, and I kept saying, this isn't going to work. But, you know, talk about the jazz world, Kent. Here's such a fascinating thing. Because in the jazz world, which I grew up in, and I know you know so much about, one of the things that you did, in effect, when you decided to be a musician, was you were dropping out. You were saying there's going to be a small niche of what I'm going to live in, and I'm studying, and very few went to school, very few studied at Juilliard, very few did any of that, you know? It was mainly a place and a way to drop out. And there was marijuana and alcohol and a couple of other drugs around that helped you even drop out further. But when you dropped out, you didn't drop out, you dropped into.
Sure.
And you dropped into a culture and into a world. And I could tell you if you could remember the Five Spot Cafe on Third Avenue or even Bertolin or any of the great jazz spots, it was a culture of people who were kind of, we're in it together. And I think there's something about in adolescence that when you drop out, you don't only leave a struggling culture, you join a depressive culture, but it's a family. Do you know what I'm talking about, Stacey?
It's sort of, if I can't make it big like the Donald Trump and the Brad Pitt, as we were talking about, I might as well be the best of this community. Nowadays, we are just discussing the gangster mentality, the rappers, that whole, you know, struggling artist type has changed from jazz musician to a thug. You know, Tupac, back in the 90s, started thug life. It was a whole era of people looking up to these individuals. They were all dropouts. They were the thugs and the gangsters who dropped out but who made it successful anyway. They made it their way, sort of against society, against the idealized Donald Trump. They made success their own way.
So what we elders like you, well, you are an elder now, you see that? Stacey, I hate to tell you, you know, I know you're pushing 30, but you're an elder. Because when you look at the kids will look at you and say, oh, she's an elder. But what you elders now do is look backwards and say, see, these lousy kids, they don't know what's good for them. But in a way, they're creating, they're teaching us. They're saying, here's what I need, it's over there, not where you are.
Yeah, I think that hasn't changed. I mean, we're talking about, you know, Rebel Without a Cause, James Dean in the 50s. I mean, there's nothing new about feeling angry, feeling like you don't fit in, and certainly feeling resentful and having perhaps a healthy sort of rebellion and questioning about authority, about parents, about psychiatrists on talk shows. I mean, just questioning, and that's healthy. But I think when you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, you're saying school and all institutions all stink, is, you know, coming from a pretty angry place. And as you're saying, if there's no sense of, well, I'm rejecting this, and this is what I want to do, instead, I'm going to be Ralph Nader, or I'm going to join the Peace Corps, or I'm going to do something, you know, that's not about being Donald Trump and making lots of money, but something I think is valuable, as opposed to I'm dropping out and I'm going to be a gangster and I want to sell drugs or something like that, you know, something, you know, against authority, but something sort of negative to society.
It's very tough, because how do you get something, I mean, if you think about it, how do you, I met a man the other day who said doctors, you go to them and you call up their office and they say, first thing they say is, what kind of insurance do you have? He says, and right there, they all invalidate themselves. Right at that moment, it's not the doctor I'm looking for. And so he gives up on doctors and he gives up on ever finding a cure for anything that's wrong with him. You know, he gives up on it in many ways. He even feels that way about the holistic doctors, you know, who sell you their vitamins with their names on them. He said, you know, it's just anybody out there that's a healthcare provider no longer is. Well, that very mind of an adult who perceives the world that way is the same mind that the kid has. Because the kid's looking and saying, where's the integrity? Where's the goodness? I think the best thing we could have is a role model. I mean, as I grew up, I could think of, in one hand, I could think of five role models. Can you think of five role models that you had? Can you think of one that you had? Can you think of one person that as a kid you admired, who was not in your family, who you admired and say, ah, now, see, I'd like to be like that grown up? Who comes to your mind?
Probably someone like Ralph Nader, I must admit.
How about somebody you knew on a more personal level?
On a personal level? Probably, believe it or not, one of the teachers in my school.
Which one?
My math teacher.
What was his name?
Mr. White.
I had a Mr. Tobias. Mm-hmm. What about Mr. White? What made him special?
I think he was somebody who, for example, by his choice of being a teacher, suggested he wasn't in the, you know, rat race world of success and capitalism and making money and all that sort of superficiality. And he also, you know, seemed to really love what he did and seemed to have a genuine concern about helping students. That seemed to be...
High school, college, what was it?
High school.
You, high school, Mr. White. Mm-hmm. What was his first name?
I think Bill.
Bill White, wherever you are, right, turned Kent Robertshaw around because he got your attention. You looked at him and you said, hey, this man really cares. Did you get that feeling?
I did get that feeling. And to get to, like, why people, for example, I think a lot of adolescents are like, well, why do you care, Mom and Dad, about me staying in school? Again, do you care about me and you care about my future? Or do you care about the fact that it would be disrespectful and shameful for you if I dropped out? I mean, why is there the pressure to stay in school, a kid asks? Is it for my benefit or for your status as parent, you know, as the bumper sticker, proud parent of, you know, an honor student? Is this about you that I'm staying in school when there's so many things, sex, drugs, rock and roll pulling me out of school? Or is this for my benefit? And I think a lot of adolescents, when they feel it's not for them, again, it gets back to the one of the ways to stick it to their parents, which is, you really don't care about my happiness. This is for your well-being that I stay in school. And I think a good teacher will communicate that this is for your benefit. You know, this is this. You have your, you know, your self-interest to stay in school for your future life.
I think it's also important that parents try to emphasize who the to try to promote for the child who they want to be. And I think maybe a lot of kids feel they have to go to school to please the parent rather than, this is going to be something that I want to do. Who do I want to be? That's not really promoted anymore. It's complete the requirements, pick a major, fill in a box, and try to fit in the box instead of exploring who am I, you know, where am I going, what am I passionate about. With parents, a lot of the times, it's do this, do that. You have to know, it's like a check-off list of what to complete. Graduate high school, get into college, graduate college. Even now it's graduate school.
Who turned your head around, Stacy? Who made you stop and look and say, wow?
I have to say it was my therapist. As a young girl, I had such a connection with my therapist that she was genuine. She was very genuine, and I admired her. I looked up to her. She was very calm, and I always wanted to feel calm, and that was my issue, was anger. When I was a young girl, I had a lot of anger. So she was always so calm and level-headed.
What was her name?
Marianne Muldoon.
Marianne Muldoon. It was a long time since you said her name.
No.
No? You say your name a lot? Marianne Muldoon turned your head around because you saw kindness.
I became a therapist because of her.
Wow. You're gonna... Okay, and Bill White. Bill White, right?
Bill White, yes.
Do you have any idea where Bill White is nowadays?
I'm... tell you, he was a little bit older, so I'm sure he's retired from teaching, and he's somewhere in Pennsylvania where I come from.
Boy, I had two people. One guy was Professor Prince Joseph. Prince Joseph used to be at Hunter, and he taught music. But he taught classical music, but he was a jazz musician on the side, and he played organ at St. Thomas Church. He was like this, you know, great guy. I got to him recently. I said, you're not going to remember me. And he said, not remember you. He says, how could I forget you? And he talked about what it meant to him to teach and to see the impression he was making on me as a college teacher. And the other guy was Dick Ward. Dick Ward, do you know who that name, you know that name at all? He's an actor. He was in Ceremonies for Dark Old Men. He was in Mandingo. He was my neighbor. And whenever I would go wandering around the neighborhood, not knowing where I'm going to go as a kid, Dick Ward would say, hey, kiddie, come with me to a jazz club. And at 14, 15 years old, he'd bring me into a jazz club where I'd have a soda, and I'd sit with him. And his kindness, he didn't want anything. He didn't do anything. The pure kindness got right through. And that's what I love about you, Kent. I love one of the things about you that I like. I know. You didn't think I was going to lay that on you, right? Board licensees, he licensed psychiatrists. He can charge any amount of money he wants, and he does. He gets paid big bucks by some people, but I go to him and I say, Kent, these people need help. Give them a break. And you give a lot of your time. You give a lot of your energy, and you do it because, I think, because you care. And they walk away from you, and they tell me, you know, they felt it. So therapists have a terrific role. They have a great opportunity. Teachers have a great opportunity. Even administrators, right? Like Paula Jeck, who's sitting with us today. You walk in the front door, you get the kindness of Paula, right? Boom, it makes such a difference. We have no idea how much of a difference we make on every adolescent. There are people who will walk in the door and they'll throw things at you. There are people who will walk in the door and they'll yell at you. They'll accuse you of being just like everybody else. But if in your heart of hearts you know you're a decent person, it's like it's all right. The trouble with the teachers and the schools is everybody's yelling at them. The kids are yelling at them. The parents are yelling at them. The administrators are yelling at them. Your grade point average is too low. How do they grade teachers?
They don't. They have tenure, and they don't get graded. Once you pass tenure, you're in for life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But so most of the teachers I've ever met, there are very few exceptions, have been pretty sour. What about you? Is that your experience too?
I think they're sort of burnt out sometimes. They don't get enough pay. They're definitely not appreciated in society. They sort of get the blame for a lot of things. And I don't think they have enough sort of substance in society. Not substance, maybe support from society to be all the time in a positive mood, you know, supportive to the students and that role model. It's a big burden to carry to be the role model to all these students every year, different students.
Well, you know, if you're making believe you're a role model, it's difficult to do. If you are your role model, if you live it that way, if you walk your talk, then it's easy to do.
Right.
You know, it's kind of simple being myself, you know, to make a living just being myself. But now I want to go back a second because now you bring up something very interesting. It's Stacy Nunez, by the way. You have the kids coming to school feeling unappreciated, unloved, criticized, and barely able getting by, and they are being taught by teachers who feel unappreciated, unloved, unrespected, right, and being blamed. And these teachers have to look at these children, and don't you think the children are not carrying the teachers' frustration as well? Our society is not taking care of our teachers. We're not saying, if you're going to be there, we have to honor you. We don't honor the teachers. And so what else do we expect when it kind of filters out through the bottom, through the form of acting out adolescence? Of course they're pissed off. Of course they are. How are they being treated? What do they feel? What do they get? Now, okay, so maybe you could schmooze one teacher. Maybe you convince one teacher that you're cute, you know, and he sidles up to you because you're a sweet boy or a sweet girl, and he gives you little special things, you know. Maybe they could do that. Maybe you could bring an apple for the teacher. Maybe that works. But what we're looking for is to try to generate a caring sense. That's, I think, the cure for this dropout more than anything else, because there is no family. School was a family. You know, school used to be your family, your interim family, before you left your family. And that seems to be gone. So what you have now is you go from a family to a step family that doesn't like you.
Yeah, step family that's too many students in the classroom. You're overstretched and no child left behind, so you have paperwork and a lot of administrative duties that you now have to do that takes away from connecting to a child that will keep them interested in the classroom.
So what do the kids do? The kids nowadays, they now have suddenly taken to, and we just got some recent information on medications, that now the streets have been filled with prescription medications. What's the deal with that? I mean, certainly they've gotten the stuff from the ADHD, but now they're attracted to sleeping pills.
Yeah, I think so much of these medications are, you know, handed out like water to their parents. So a lot of these kids are just looking into their parents' or their friends' parents' medicine cabinets, and they're finding ambient sleeping pills, pain medications, adult ADD medications. So, you know, they don't have to go to a pusher to find something to make them high. It's often in their parents' cabinets. And certainly the sleeping pills, studies would show, are often coming from their parents. Their parents are now being prescribed sleeping pills.
And now they pass them along to each other.
Sure.
And now they'll set, I'll give you one of these, give me an Adderall, I'll give you an Ambien, right? I'll trade you a blue one for a green one, a Sonesta. What is it? They have all these wonderful sleeping pill names. They have sleeping pills now. Oh, I'm going to ask you, is it true? You have a sleeping pill if you want to sleep for 3 hours. You have a sleeping pill if you want to sleep all night. You have a sleeping pill that's going to get you to sleep if according to how bad you sleep. They have a different medication. There must be, what, 10 different popular sure. medications?
Sure.
And how do you pick from one to the other?
Well, which I think it's the one that has the best advertisement is what's guiding a lot of people, you know. What, the last commercial I saw, sadly.
Well, except for restless leg syndrome. Now watch out for this, my friends. You're about to see the world is going to besiege you with restless leg syndrome. A patient came to see me the other day, told me about a drug that she was taking. I called up Kent. I said, Kent, what is this drug? And he calls me back and he said, it's for restless leg syndrome. And I said, what restless leg syndrome? And they're there standing in front of me as one of my assistants. She said, I can't believe you just mentioned it. My girlfriend just told me she's taking that drug for restless leg syndrome. And then everybody knows what it is. So let's talk about what it is. What's restless leg? We've got the legs up here for people listening to the studio.
Restless leg syndrome, well, the advertisers would have you believe it's a syndrome that mainly affects you at night where you have kind of itchy and restless, quote-unquote, legs, so that you can't fall asleep because your legs, the itchiness, the fact that you keep having to move them is what keeps you up at night. And so it supposedly calms that itch or that restlessness down so it doesn't distract you from falling asleep.
So it's a sleeping pill, but it's really not a sleeping pill.
That's right.
It's a Parkinson's pill. It's a neurological, so therefore it works on neurology, it works on your nerves?
That's correct.
And it therefore dulls your itch?
It supposedly dulls your itch so that you're able to sleep without your distracting, itchy legs.
And if you don't know that the reason you can't sleep is because you have distracting, itchy legs, within a couple of months, television will convince you that the reason you can't sleep is because you have itchy legs. And people in the middle of the summer, when their skin gets dry, are going to pay attention to the fact, you know, my legs are itchy. I need that drug. And what's the name of the drug?
Requip.
I need that drug.
Also, to tie that back in, it then promotes the societal message of instant gratification. You have restless legs, you have depression, you have anxiety. Take this pill. Don't worry about what's causing it or how to maybe become an active member in your life, a proactive person in your life. Just take this pill and it'll go away.
Scratch that itch. Scratch that itch seems to be smart because nowadays you don't know if you're going to live past the next itch. You know what I mean? Nowadays, the society has kind of just convinced you that you better get what you can now because your future, if it's in the hands of those in charge right now, might be short-lived. You know, you may not have much to do. You may never get back from Iran. You know, well, anyway, this is Armand DeMille with you. It's a Positive Mind. My guest, Stacey Nunez, who is a consultant to young adolescents, older adolescents, young adults, and families, especially with families and dealing with problems with teenagers. I've been fascinated by this. And Kent Robert Shaw, who will be with us a lot more, who is a psychiatrist who works with the minimal amount of possible invasion through medication. But the best thing about Kent is he packs good music. And he does pack good music, boy. So we will be back with you tomorrow with Roberta Maria Atti and bringing you more stuff. If you want to get in touch with me or you want to hear a copy of today's program, you can hear it on thepositivemind.com. Thepositivemind.com. It'll be replayed very shortly, and you can also see our website. And you can get in touch with Stacy through the website.